free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net, see our upcoming shows, as well as get archives from our past shows. If you want to join us online, if you're listening live, you can get our phone numbers there. We do ask that you call toward the end of the hour. Today is December 24th, 2007, Christmas Eve, and for this holiday season, we're joined by David Wells to talk about the weather, how to bring in a white Christmas, actually, weather control via a Newman-like device. A dozen years ago, while pursuing a possible over-unity machine, Mr. Wells discovered that the machine was affecting local weather. Several machines, and a few years later, the effect is much better understood and refined, and he's interested in possibly coming up with a network of people who could do things like hurricane abatement and whatnot. David, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, this thing, it was a long time coming. I found it because back in 1994, I went to a demonstration of Joe Newman's motor, and talking to Joe, I thought, well, you can't do this. You can't get more electricity out of a motor than you put into it. And anyway, after talking to him and his associate there, I thought, well, maybe this does work. But if it does, how does it get its energy? Well, looking at his motor, I could kind of get an idea of what he was doing. So I came back to my shop and I built one of these things. And I proceeded to test it to see if I could find out where this power comes from. And several strange things showed up when I was testing the thing. Well, first place, it did run really cheap. I got down to where I could not tell whether I'm putting more in than what I'm taking out. So I come up with an idea. I would split the circuit, and I put on two batteries instead of one, and the power came out of one battery and went into the other one. And this helped me analyze just what's coming in and what's coming out, but they were so close together that I could not determine whether it was gaining or losing. So I figured, well, we'll give it the acid test. I got a couple little moped batteries. They were 5-amp-hour, 12-volt batteries. Hooked them up to the thing, and I said, we'll let it run. If it keeps on going, it works. If the batteries go dead, it doesn't work. Well, it took 90 days to run these batteries dead. And during this 90-day period of time, I observed several odd things. I lived 12 miles from my shop, and driving into the shop, I kept noticing this curious hole in the cloud cover. It'd be total overcast. I'd be driving toward the shop and get down to town, and the sun's shining. There's a big round hole up there in the sky. And this appeared to be connected to the machine. And anyway, the odds of finding this were kind of slim, because when you make one of these motors, the coil has to be wound the right way. It has to turn the right direction. Polarities are all involved. It's a 12-volt DC motor, and if you hook it up wrong, it doesn't do anything. Or if it does do something, it's something completely different. Plus, you could take a box and set it down, and there'd be six sides that you could set it on. The motor's in a box. You could turn the box in four different directions for each side, so you'd have 16 different positions you could park this box in. And over the years, we determined that only one position, when you set the box down and point at what we call east, you will get the hole in the sky. Now, if this hadn't happened, if it hadn't happened that we parked the machine in this exact configuration, we would have never noticed that the thing was changing the weather. Well, luckily, this happened. I spotted the hole in the sky and started looking for other oddities on the thing. Anyway, the thing appeared to stop rain. It would be raining all around the town, but not in the town. And this is kind of odd, so we did a little test and ran the thing, and it stopped the rain for a long time, like 6 weeks. Well, then we started looking for the directions which would make rain, and we found them. It could make lots of rain. And then further investigation told me that I wasn't the first to do this stuff. A guy named Wilhelm Reich used a different method called cloud busting. And the big question mark on all this, these things turned back in these times, we found that these things have huge long range. We can affect clouds a long ways from the shop. I hooked up a radar and found out when I would turn the machine, the radar would change in a far distant place, maybe 600 miles away.
When you say so radar, what, you're talking about the
weather satellite. You hook up the TV and turn on the weather channel and look and see what you're doing. You turn the machine, you wait 20 minutes and look and see what changes. So this is how you tell what you're doing. Your radar image is your test bench to see the results of your experiments. And anyway, the machine is obviously changing things, but it was very unpredictable. It turned out that over a long period of time, we determined the thing runs on the moon. It does different things during different phases of the moon. And this seemed kind of strange. You know, why would it work one day and not the next? And anyway, the answer to this came when I went to Arizona. I went out to Arizona on a trip and found these focal points that the Indians built kivas on these things. And in the city of Sedona, there are focal points all over the place there. They're the strongest ones in the world, reportedly. Well, when you take a machine to this spot, you have the power of unimaginable proportions to change weather. We went up on top of the mountain at the by the airport, where the most powerful vortex is, set up the machine and started it up. There was a hole in the sky right above the thing, and the sky cleared off to a dimension of about 60 miles in about 10 minutes. And then we turned it around and clouded it right back up in a half an hour. And a huge thunderstorm appears north of the town up by Flagstaff. 7 inches of hail comes down in Flagstaff. You know, I mean, this thing is really pounded down some weather out here. And anyway, this told me where this thing is originating from. Well, further studies determined that
Let me just interject here. When you talk about 7 inches of hail, in all my lifetime, I've never heard of that much hail landing anywhere. The most I've ever seen personally is maybe an inch. So
yeah, the depth of the hailstones in Flagstaff on that day were 7 inches deep. It was phenomenal. But anyway, this thing, on this spot, you control the world's weather to a really huge magnitude, because it turns out that the world's weather originates from Arizona. Once per day, a line drawn from Arizona through a hurricane will go to the moon. See, it has to do with wave propagation. If you throw a rock into a pond, you get a circle of rings coming off from it. This is one type of wave. Another type of wave would be if you was to tie a string between two posts and tweak the string. This would be a longitudinal wave, which would be much more powerful than the wave that's from the rock that's thrown into the pond, because throw it into the pond, the waves get weaker and weaker and weaker as they spread away from it. So when you have this kind of wave, they go everywhere, and they can be amplified by interference with another wave. We'll get to this later on. This is how the machine actually works. We have wave interference creating situations that will cause precipitation. And the other end of the string, we have the one point for the longitudinal wave would be Sedona, Arizona. The other end of the string is the moon. As the moon goes around the world, it creates a very powerful longitudinal wave between the Arizona spot and the moon. So F5 tornadoes are invariably formed at a point in time when Arizona's on one end of the string, the string goes through the tornado and terminates at the moon. The moon is the engine that drives this air with such violence. It's a force that flows right through the world, and when it exits, it creates this unbelievable power.
Yeah. So you were describing to me some ways that you were actually modifying some local tornadoes. Maybe you can describe that process.
Okay. Arizona says the tornado should be where the line comes out of the earth and goes to the moon. Now, if we run one of these wave generators that I have, we produce an effect on Earth in a different spot that's like what happens from Arizona. Now we have two situations going on, and the effect generated by the machine interferes with what should have happened according to the Arizona line. So now we have two lines, and they interfere with each other. Now, Arizona is saying the storm should be over here, but our machine says, no, the storm should be over here. So this is what changes the weather, and it's not real simple how it works, but it does work. And anyway, the wave interference pattern thing, I didn't figure this out until probably a couple months ago. I was looking at a particular storm, and for years I'd seen diamond-shaped vortex formations in storms. Now, these were curious in the fact that because they didn't move during the storm. The storm is passing over these areas, but here are these stationary, intense dots, like, and there would always be four of them. Usually you could find four, and they're so geometrically equidistant to each other as to be non-natural. And anyway, the storms were evidently caused by something, and I couldn't figure it out until I noticed four storms one day. One was in Marble Rock. I was running my machine. The other one was up in Manly, which is about 40 miles away. Another one in North Springs, another one over in Sheffield. And the alignment of these was such that if we draw a line from Marble Rock to Manly and bisect it, it would go straight to Arizona. So this looked like a circular arc coming off of Arizona. There were actually three waves coming from Arizona, and my machine was setting them two circles, basically, 20 miles apart, and the first circle would have been 40 miles in diameter, the second one 80 miles in diameter. But where these lines cross, this is where you get your storm. So it's wave interference. You want storms, pick out where you want the waves to land, you'll get your precipitation there, the heavy stuff. And if we wanted to target an area for rainfall, all we'd have to do is run two machines, interfere the waves in the right spots. We could dump rain exactly on any spot we want doing this. So now we can engineer rainfall. This is a good one because we can stop droughts this way and put out forest fires, things like that. And anyway, if this thing is used properly, we could kick hurricanes out to sea and stop them from wrecking the town. If we stop one hurricane from killing a town, we'd pay for a whole program of these things. I think what we need to have is about one of these things in every state and controlled by some command center that has people watching this stuff all the time. One of the problems we have now, there's about a dozen of these machines scattered all over the country that we put out for trying to find out things about them. I got a group of scientists working with me that they're trying to find out more about this thing. And they've all found that they can independently control their own little area without interfering with what somebody else is doing, which was a good thing, because if one machine can stomp on all the rest of them or confuse the issue, we'd be kind of in the position of Marconi. When Marconi had come up with his wireless transmitter, he didn't have any interference because he was the only guy one in the world who's sending out electrical signals. But as soon as somebody else got one going, then he had a problem because everybody's interfering with everybody else, and he had to figure out how to separate the wavelengths, and that was the beginnings of modern radio, where everybody's got their own little bandwidth, and they get to work on that, and got to stay out of everybody else's bandwidth, or else they're going to fall up communications. But that's another long, detailed thing in science, but it's something like that. We wanted to know if machines would work independently of each other and control individual little areas, and they do. It's sort of like throwing, you have a big pond, and somebody throws a rock in, and there's a huge array of ripples coming out. Well, you could throw smaller rocks in here and there, and these ripples will interfere with the waves coming off of the major one, which is Arizona. And on these locations where you interfere with the wave pattern, you're going to get your weather changes. And that's how it works. When you review Trevor Constable's work, he used Cloudbusters, and his devices, if you review the tapes of his work, you'll find that his storms appear to be generated on one of the waves coming from Arizona. Actually, there's two waves involved. His waves were also 20 miles long, which is a curiosity I haven't resolved yet as to why they're 20 miles long, but we don't argue with it. They're 20 miles long. You can see them on the pictures that are taken. A guy named Scott Stevens, he was a weatherman from Payson, Utah, and anyway, he took probably thousands of pictures of oddities of the weather, gritting, holes in the sky, weird clouds that don't look natural, storm formations that are totally bizarre, crazy things on the eyes of hurricanes. And he thought that the aliens are doing this, or the Russians are doing it, or some secret weapon. Well, it wasn't any of that. It was our stuff. Sorry, Bernard Eastland, your heart doesn't do anything. I've been watching the weather a long time, and the only effects I see that are normal are the ones that we do with our stuff. And it's kind of strange that a little bitty box that runs on a battery that wouldn't power a moped light for 5 minutes can change the weather. But that's the way Mother Nature is sometimes. You think to change the weather you're going to need 1,000-foot towers and 50,000 horsepower and jillion-volt lightning strikes or something like that. It doesn't work that, like that at all. It works on a power that's so small that we can't really find it with an oscilloscope. We map the waveforms of the motor, and 99% of the motor's current goes just to run the motor. A little tiny bit of it comes out in this other form of energy, which is kind of strange, and that changes the weather. And anyone can access this energy and study it anywhere in the country. All you have to do is light a flame. Now, for some strange reason, between the flame and Sedona, Arizona, you will find a beam of what feels like heat. It does not stop for anything. This beam goes through walls. It goes through, actually it doesn't go around the world. It goes right straight through the world until it gets to Arizona. And this can be found anywhere in the country. So this was one of my better discoveries, because people say you're nuts, and you show them this, and they find the beam, and now they know you got something real here.
Can you say that about 40% of the people can detect that or sense it?
Yeah, something like that. Some people can't find it. It's sort of like if you took a light bulb into a room full of people, and half of them couldn't see, you'd have a little trouble convincing everybody you had something, wouldn't you? So, you know, not everybody's sensitive to this, but a lot of people are, and if you can't find it yourself, have somebody else check for it, they'll find it for you. And, you know, it's a real thing.
How far away from the flame do you put your hand?
You can go 50 feet, 100 feet, as long as you track the beam, you'll find it. It doesn't stop, it doesn't weaken with distance. When we run one of our machines, an identical beam will show up to the machine that's running. And the curious thing about this is you can have a machine 50 feet away and sense the beam to that, and have one that's 1,000 miles away, and the beam to the 1,000-mile-away machine is just like the one that's 50 feet away. This thing seems to have no differentiation.
No attenuation?
Yeah, you can't find any difference from a far-distant machine to one that's close up. The beam is there, no matter what, from flame. And this flame thing is probably an ether flow. I know there's not supposed to be any ether. There's supposed to be quantum physics and all that, but a lot of the work we've done indicates, yeah, there is an ether of some sort, but we'll have to wait and see what they say about that. The machine apparently can affect the speed of light also. I did some tests on that. We set up synchronous motors and put rotating mirrors on them. These motors turned to 3,600 RPM, and they were timed by being hooked to the power line. And when we would shine a laser on the mirrors, we tune it up so that the laser hit the mirror and went 100 feet to another mirror, and then it went 30 feet to a wall. And the distance and time it took to get from one mirror to the other could be changed enough to move the dot on the wall 3 inches. We'd turn the machine around and move over the other way, which means the only thing that could change this would be changing the time it took to get from one mirror to the next. The speed of light's changing. To back up this experiment, we got a GPS satellite receiver, figuring that if the machine could change the speed of light, it would also change the speed of waves coming from a GPS satellite. And sure enough, when we ran the machine, we got a position shift of about 3 clicks on the west dimension and 1 click on the north dimension. And so it changes the satellite location, so apparently it's changing
the... What does 3 clicks correspond to in distance?
Arc seconds. It would be the coordinates. You got an X and Y coordinate on a GPS satellite location.
Didn't you say that was about 20 feet?
I think it'd be... That's one thing we didn't know about this machine was how far you have to go before it changes one notch, you know. But I think it's 20, 30 feet or something like that before it moves.
Uh-huh.
So it could have been changing position locations as much as 60 feet if it was 20 foot per click.
Well, the thing about those measurements is that that's a very scientific, reproducible effect.
Oh, yeah. It's reproducible. And
mm-hmm.
It does reproduce, I'm sure of it. Anyway, all you have to have is one of these machines, a GPS thing. You can check it all. And anyway, the other things that it does, the effect, when a machine runs, plants home on the machine. They grow towards the machine as if it was the sun. And we have a tree next to my shop with a branch that's about 35 feet long that grew on a northwest direction towards the machine. I mean, just obvious as can be, this plant was homing on the machine. And we've had plants that grow in the dark. We've had dark rooms with green plants growing in them. The power mimics photosynthesis enough that a plant can live on it. This could lead to a situation where you get a greenhouse that doesn't have any lights in it, growing food indoors without lights. It doesn't cost anything to run these things. They run on almost nothing for power. You know, about 50 millionths of an amp is enough to run the motor. And anyway, there's lots of evidence of what we've done. If you go to Scott Stevens' website, there's hundreds
What's
of
that
pictures.
Website?
Scott Stevens. Just type Scott Stevens. It comes up to weatherwars.com. I think that's the name of his website.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to get a hold of Scott Stevens, but I don't know. I can't find his phone number anywhere. If somebody knows how to get a hold of him, have him call me. By the way, my phone number is 641-330-6392. If anybody wants to call me, I'll give you that one more time later on. And Anyway, this thing needs to be put into effect in a big way. You know, the weather is so destructive that, and it's getting worse as global warming takes place. With this technology here, we can actually throttle the planet's temperature up or down if we want to. You know, I think we can take control of the weather and it won't be a problem anymore. And, you know, then it's a question of what do we want to do with this globe? Do we want to change Nebraska into a cornfield? You know, we could increase the rainfall over there and raise corn. It would be suicidal for a farmer to raise corn now because you don't get enough water. On some years you do, but most of the years you don't. So they plant wheat. You know, they could put on a lot higher productive crop. If the water was going to come, a farmer could plant heavier. If you have a light year, around here you get 160 bushel acres of corn. If you get like 3 precisionally placed rainfalls during the summer, the crop could go up to 200 bushel. If you get 6 really good rainfalls, you could get 250 bushel. Guys that irrigate, you get...
In our litigious society, when...
Go ahead. Are you there?
My phone died.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. information and knowledge. Bringing humanity closer.
About that, we had a little technical difficulty there, got disconnected. We are
connected. Where were we?
Again.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was asking you about, we have a litigious society where if people knew that the local weatherman was actually manipulating the weather and was giving us weather on demand, whether it was rainy, sunshiny, you've got sports fans who want the dry weather, you've got farmers who want rain, who decides what weather's going to be? And when you get an angry person who wants to sue the government because a flood washed out their home in the canyon, that could get pretty messy pretty fast.
Well, it's like this. The flood is going to wash out somebody's home. The tornado is going to blow somebody's town away. The hurricane is going to wreck another city like New Orleans. Unless somebody sets up something like we got here. These things can stop this sort of stuff. I mean, we're not out to destroy some state fair or something like that by flooding the place. Well, in fact, it would be possible to guarantee good weather for social events like that and also bring down the rain for the crops. You can time this stuff by using these things. You can steer storms around events and bring storms into areas on schedule. You know, it's a matter of how you manipulate the waves. And it's all doable and pretty well figured out now.
In the process of learning, though, there's still a bit of a learning curve. And you said
we kind of went through that already. We know what it does now, and the learning parts are pretty well done. I mean, when we first started doing this, it was kind of fly by the seat of your pants. Just turn the machine on and turn it this way, turn it that way, and see what happens. And there's lots that happened. These days are gone. Now we don't do this anymore. We've realized this is not a toy. You don't want to take somebody out in your backyard and say, watch these clouds, I'll make them disappear, you know, or now we'll put them back again. Because while you're doing this, you're messing up the weather somewhere else. So you shouldn't run these things without watching what's going on.
And these devices are simple to build. Didn't you say you could build one in an afternoon?
Yeah, if you got a nice little machine shop, yeah. It's not hard to make one. The hard part is knowing how to make them, you know, and we don't tell anybody how to make them because we don't really want the terrorists to know how this is done. And you could build a machine, but if you don't wire it right, it's not probably going to work. And if you do get it going, it's going to take you 6 months to find out what it does. So we're kind of safe in that way. It'll take them a while to figure out what the things do. And, but it's going to happen. Now, the only thing that'll save us from terrorists is the fact that, multiple machines can work together and control each individual area. So if we got enough machines, it would be impossible for one to come in and destroy the weather. If you had the only machine in the country, yeah, you could tear up the weather pretty good. When I first started out, I did something that was really unusual. Tropical Depression Andreas formed off the coast of Baja, I think it was 1997, or 1996, but I had four machines, two of them very powerful, two of them kind of weak, in Marble Rock. There was nobody else doing this. I was like Marconi with the only wireless transmitter. And I locked onto that storm and sent it down to Panama. Now, this doesn't sound like much until you've realized that since 1886, they were tracking storms that formed there. This is a tropical depression, almost a hurricane. And I'm steering it down the coast, heading it south and east, headed towards Panama. I could steer it out to sea, bring it towards shore, just by angling the machines. Well, since 1886, 705 storms formed there on that particular time period. Every single one of them went towards Hawaii, without exception. This is the first time in history that any storm ever went that way. And I'm up here driving it that way with my device, and I'm having a field day because, yeah, this is really working, you know. The Weather Channel had a field day with this thing. And anyway, I know it caused it. They don't. All they know is it did that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this is the kind of control you have.
What would you say the thing cost? About $200 in parts?
It tops, yeah. I think you can get the stuff out of it for $50.
12-volt battery?
Yeah, you need a couple batteries.
During the weather.
Huh?
I said a 12-volt battery and $200 in parts and an afternoon in building the machine, and you're steering the weather.
And no power consumed, to speak of. I mean, you can, it doesn't even use an amp off your battery charger. You know, I think about this is it's a Joe Newman motor. Now, when I talked to Joe Newman, he said that he ran a window fan for 5 years on an 8-volt battery. The battery never went dead all that time. Now, because they use such a low amount of power, it's possible the 8-volt battery did last 5 years. I'm not sure. You know, my little battery lasted 90 days. So how long would a bigger one last? You know, quite a bit longer, probably. But anyway, during this time, Texas got no rain whatsoever. For 5 years, it was just next to nothing for rain. Well, as I ran my machine, they determined that an area south and west of the machine appeared to get a huge reduction in rainfall. Now, at this time, Joe Newman was in Lucidale, Mississippi, and I kind of think his machine had something to do with that big Texas drought. See, he was doing basically what I'm doing, not quite the same, but similar. And all of a sudden, you know, if you run a machine in one spot continuously, pointing in the same direction, you're going to get an area that doesn't have any rain. Now, in order to understand this further, once we found out its wave propagation, we started looking into waves, and we found this little program called Ripple Tank on the Internet. You just type in Ripple Tank on Google, and up comes this thing where you can put a couple sources on a screen, and they send out ripples, and you can watch the ripples interfere with each other. And you can also set up multiple sources, up to 6 of them with this program, and watch the ripples interfere with each other. And you can take the mouse and drag the ripples around the sources around the screen and position them. So by positioning these points on the map of you pretend like the screen is the map of the United States. You put a source down in Arizona, it's sending out ripples. You put one up in Iowa, where I'm at, a few of the other locations, and you can see the entire pattern of weather generators that you're putting out across the country. And when you put up the stuff that we have right now, you suddenly see a drought in Georgia, you see a drought in the Southeast California area. And what we need to
do is... Let me just mention that the URL of that website is Falstad, falstad.com/ripple, all lowercase, /. And when you pull up that page, what happens is you just sit there a minute or so, and another window will pop up, and it'll show it's an applet that enables you, it gives you some commands over on the right-hand side. And you choose one of those commands. There's one control in particular that you want to mess around with. And which one is that?
Two sources, two frequencies works really good for getting an idea of what's going to happen between the sources. You can move the sources close together. You can move them far apart. And anyway, an interesting one is to move the sources right next to each other. And you'll see bands coming out of the thing in all different directions, like up to 10, 15 bands coming out of the two sources. And this is what happened when I went to Arizona and ran the thing on the focal point.
I was just going to mention, it's the second option down in all of the different settings. You set that one to two sources, two frequencies, and then you put your mouse on the little X or the plus sign, and you can drag these little things around. See what happens when you move them, get them closer together, farther apart.
Right.
I played with this for about 2 hours after we talked last time.
Oh, good. To simulate the direction of the machine, if you draw a little line by the source, it produces a wall, and then the waves only propagate out in one direction from the source, so you can simulate directional characteristics of different machine settings also. And this is a good one. But if we get going on this project where there's going to be a machine in every state like we're talking about, then some kind of a weather center where people decide what we're going to do with it and how we're going to change this country's weather. You know, like we now have to decide what are we going to do with the country, because Arizona used to cause it. Now we have a new situation coming up. The world is changing. Global warming's kicking in. Do we want to maintain what we have? Do we want to make some corrections to make things better? Do we want to maintain our desert in the Southwest? You know, do we want to change Nebraska into a cornfield? Things like this. There's a paradigm shift coming up here, because now we don't have to settle for what Mother Nature hands us. We can actually engineer what we want. And it's all right there possible. It doesn't cost much to do, except the expertise involved in finding out how you're going to do what. And
I asked you in our earlier phone conversation how many weather events that you've, between the dozen devices that are out there with different operators, how many different weather events do you think this thing has affected, either turning it on or turning it off?
Thousands of them. The thing about it is, when you change an event, the result is just weather, so nobody notices it, other than somebody like Scott Stevens. Scott Stevens noticed the patterns that are generated that are changing the weather. Like, he would forecast the rain, and suddenly a big hole would appear in the sky, and he didn't get any rain. And this kind of upset him a little bit, because he forecasted rain, he was wrong. Well, it wasn't wrong, it was going to rain, but somebody turned on a machine and put a hole in the sky. These holes are interesting, too. When you're at the machine, you see the hole through a long tunnel through the clouds. So if Scott would have went through the hole, looked down in it, he would have been looking at one of these machines. And this is one of the first things I noticed. When I would come to the shop, I would be driving from the north on a totally cloudy, overcast day, and you can't see the sun. And when I get down to the three-mile corner east of town, I look off to the east, and here's this long tunnel with the sun down at the end of it, and it goes straight borehole right to the sun. Between the machine and the sun, it would clear out the clouds. I called it drilling. I would drill a hole through the clouds all the way to the sun. And on the radar, you would see this hole, and it would travel across the skyline every day, and it would always be in the location where the sunlight is coming through the machine. We had a particularly cloudy month, and the local TV station said we only had 2 days of sunlight during that month. Another guy in town had a solar panel, and he was one of these guys that counts everything. He says, they're not, just, we had like 16 days of sunlight, because my solar panel worked for 16 days. Well, that's because the machine is bringing out the sun all the time right on the top. Kind of an odd effect that it does. Another thing about the machine is it doesn't work all the time. When you have a full moon or a new moon, the machine appears to do little or nothing. But there are other effects that show up on new moon and full moon, especially the new moon. When new moon comes, a pail of water standing will obtain some kind of a tension. We call it jelly water. If you drag a stick through the water, stuff floating on the surface of the water doesn't move. It just sits there. Now, if you take red-hot mild steel and plunge it into the water, it gets up to 3-4 times as strong as it was. This is kind of strange. It's a hardening of a material that normally can't be hardened. Mild steel doesn't have any carbon in it. This is alloy A36. If anybody knows about steel, you know you're not going to heat treat this stuff. But we heat treat it very quickly. Just get it red hot, dunk in the water, it's all done. And the odd thing about this is high-grade steel does not improve when you do this process. Only the low-grade steel that doesn't have any carbon. So we got some weird phenomena going up there. This could have some commercial applications. If you wanted to produce jelly water and then heat treat steel, you could make low-cost wrenches out of easy-to-form, easy-to-bend, punch, form, shape alloys that need to be improved in strength a whole lot in order to make them useful. Like, if you want to make low-grade wrenches into high-grade wrenches, there's your way to go. But that's a whole other science right there. But
I wanted to mention, too, that in our last conversation, you had brought up the name of a person who had come in and gotten one of these devices from up in Idaho. He lives in Idaho. And it turns out that I know the guy. I used to hang out with him a dozen plus years ago, hung out with his house, and we were good friends. And so it didn't surprise me one whit that he had found you and gotten one of these machines, and he's been tinkering.
They tracked me down. People like him hunt me down and find me, and he did. He's put on a good show today, too. He's right in Idaho, and there's a storm up there right now that's a little bit unusual. But, you know, some of my people are dying. I put a machine in San Francisco, and that guy died, and we don't know where that machine is. And we put another one out in Santa Maria, California. A scientist named Walter Rosenthal had this thing, and he died in January this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what's happened to that machine.
Huh? He was not that young, though.
No, he was an old guy. But, you know, I have problems with machines that are run by people. The people die off. We don't know what happened to the machines. In Salt Lake City, there's a machine, and we don't know what happened to that one. But it's actually the one that was on the picture on the Internet. That machine went to Salt Lake City. I'm not going to say who had it, because a lot of these people don't want me to say who they are, you know, and
right.
I can see why. But that's a need-to-know basis on who's doing what here. I mean, we early on decided we shouldn't tell anybody what we're doing because they might make us quit before we found out what's going on. Well, now we know what's going on, so I think it's time to get the word out.
Yeah, the analogy that I brought up with you the other day when we were talking is, that it's kind of like, it just reminds me, as you talk about this very simple to build and operate machine that is having huge effects on weather, bringing in either turning off weather phenomena or turning them on. And I said it reminds me of a child playing in the dad's gun closet.
Yeah, it's like
easy
that.
To pull
we
that
realized
trigger.
Early on, this ain't toys, you know, so we don't let people have them that are not going to watch what they're doing when they're on them. You know, this was the team wears the white hats. We don't try to destroy the country. The reason Katrina did what it was, we don't have a machine over there. If we'd had a machine in that area, we probably could have stopped that storm. You know, we've stopped lots of hurricanes. There's a machine in Florida, and this one is very effective at hurricane control. This thing steers hurricanes around like a remote control cars. The guy that runs it is an expert. What do we even have to talk to him? He knows what to do. And, you know, I've seen his machine do absolutely bizarre things. And Scott Stevens noticed the bizarre tracks of these storms also. Other people also noticed that something weird is going on. But where we have a problem is we don't have machines everywhere. Where we have machines, weather is pretty well taken care of. But you get away from them a ways, and they get out of range, and it's hard to control something, especially back in the day. We didn't know what we were doing either. We were still looking for the reason it does what it does, and now we kind of know that, so things have gotten a lot better. We know what we're doing now.
Do you keep in touch with these people through email and other means so that you can kind of
we
share the information that you're getting?
Yeah, we just talk on the phone, and we'll have conferences. If the big hurricane is in the country threatening to do damage, we'll call each other up and talk and try and determine who's got the storm in the first place, because if you have enough machines, one of them's bound to be able to control it. And then the next thing is to find out which machine can actually do something to the storm. Hurricanes are tracked by this Arizona vortex thing, and actually once they get on this vortex, it's hard to get them to move more than just a few miles off of me, you know, like 50 to 100 mile track deviation of what would be the normal track is very hard to achieve. And it takes a machine in the area of the storm to actually get this to happen. But what you can do with them is you can change the shape of them. You can turn them from a donut into a D. You can put the precipitation out over the water when it makes landfall, and it dramatically reduces the damage that's done by the storm as it makes a landfall. Or in the case of a hurricane coming over Florida, then there's a machine there, and what it does, it just opens the eye, and the storm is weak. It does too hardly any damage. Wind speeds are usually 100 miles an hour, and rainfall is not hugely excessive. And like Katrina was actually controlled by our Florida machine. As it went over Florida, it would have, it was the same storm that went to Louisiana, and this storm was actually mitigated while it passed over Florida, but once it got away from that machine, it was on its own. We didn't have anything over there to do anything to it, and consequently, it did what it did. It tore the town to shreds. It's a vacant lot. And
you were telling me that even when the machine is off, it is still exerting residual effects. It's not like you can just...
When you shut them down, they're not down. They're kind of like whipping a magnet by a piece of steel. The magnetic field stays in there for quite a while after the magnet leaves. And the last run that you do with the machine, this is the setting for probably 3 weeks, something like that. So they don't actually have to run all the time. They have to run just a little bit, charge up the area. And the machine...
So it's not like you can jump one of these things in a truck and drive it on down to the area, because just traveling with the machine can create disruptions in the weather.
And when you travel with them, they have more effect than when they're stationary. Trevor Costable's machines work on this principle. Move through the area and set up your waves that way. He did most of his work on a boat called the Molly out in the Pacific Ocean back in the 80s and early 90s. And he finally gave up trying to get any action in this country, and he went over to China or someplace now, and he's over there making rain for those people. His systems work. His systems operate on the same kind of energy that I'm manipulating. He calls it Oregon energy or ether flow manipulation. But we don't know everything about physics. We found magnetism, electricity, radar, microwaves. You go on up the line, gamma rays, X-rays, all these rays from the electromagnetic spectrum. And now we just found another one. Whatever it is, you can feel it with your hand if you put it in the beam that is between this flame and Arizona. And you have to check that out for yourself, whoever you are that's listening here. And like I said,
call it the Wells effect?
I don't know what we're going to call it. it's just whatever it is. We call it the force or the flame thing. Another thing that illustrates an ether flow is take a multimeter with a needle on it, point the needle, park the thing so the needle sticking straight up and down, and light a blowtorch right beside the needle, about 3 inches from it, and you will see the needle deflect toward the flame. Whip the flame over to the other side, and it'll deflect away. Anybody with good eyes can see this. It moves maybe just a couple thousandths of an inch. Not very much, but it moves. Now, this contradicts what you would expect, because if the heat from the flame heated the air in the box, it would rise on the side of the flame, producing a convection current which would blow the needle away from the flame. If radiation hit the side of the needle and expanded it, it would cause the side near the flame to lengthen, would push the needle away from the flame. But no, the needle moves towards the flame. So this indicates to me that something is flowing into the flame, dragging the needle with it. And, you know,
tell us again, I started asking you about how you handled tornadoes. That was quite interesting.
Okay, tornadoes, the Arizona thing is telling the storm to be in a certain spot and produce a tornado. The vortex is being generated by the flow that's going to the moon from the vortex. Now, this vortex doesn't necessarily have to be in Arizona. There's one in Grand Junction. There's one in Aztec. There's smaller vortexes. It's just Arizona is the major one. Geologists find these vortexes. But anyway, when nature sends out a signal for a thunderhead to appear and form a tornado, if we send out a second signal from the machine, it says the storm should have the tornado over here. Well, now we can move the machine, say like 15 degrees, and now we changed everything. Now the machine is sending out new signals. The wave interference pattern changes altogether. Now the storm belongs in a different spot, maybe a little ways away, a few miles away, actually. So now the original storm starts powering down, and a new one starts powering up again. And this will, if you continuously move the machine 15 degrees every 20 minutes, no longer than that, no tornado will hit the ground. So you can stop tornadoes. I did this for an entire week once. A big tornado alley event came in, and Laird Lampier came on the Art Bell Show, and he says, the weather's screwy. He says, I just spent 7 bus days looking for a storm. Everything was there. The calf was there. Everything was there. They should have had lots of tornadoes. Didn't get nothing. Well, during this week, I'm up here staying up all night, all day, turning my machine back and forth so it can stop the tornadoes, you know. And after that, if I find out a tornado event's coming, I'll do this maneuver and shut them down. We haven't had anything happen here as long as I get to the machines in time. If I find out they're coming, turn the thing on, start doing the tornado suppression mode, no tornadoes. It's never failed yet. So if somebody was watching for these things and did this whenever the event was coming on, we would probably eliminate the tornado just from that simple little deal. But somebody's got to do it. If you don't do it, it doesn't happen.
You're talking about wanting to establish an association, a professional association of people who have these machines who are benignly or benevolently manipulating the weather first U.S.-wide and then
ideally, you'd have a group of machines in the country, maybe one in every state. Ideally, they'd be remote controlled. You call them up and servo motors turn them on, stop them, rotate them, adjust them, okay? They could be, with our technology, these could be easily set up to be operated from a remote area, from a central command station. And that way, the experts can set the machines and run them. You don't have to have people run them because people are unreliable. They go away on vacation. You know, they're asleep. They got jobs. You know, they're gone. They come home. They left the machine running all day and they flooded the town or something. You know, it's problems like that. Of course, the thing ought to be run by people that are there 24/7, watching it all day long. That's their job. It's like a Radio Shack on a ship. The guy's got to watch the weather, and periodically have meetings to determine who does what.
And then you've got to also modulate things up and down so that the interference patterns are doing as you want them to. And then you get, obviously, people are going to be coming on the scene with rogue machines, whether intentional or not, such as you were describing Joseph Newman having his machine may have caused a 12-year drought in Texas unwittingly. And how do you detect and identify and pinpoint the rogue machines?
Are you? Oh.
Ironically, I've been doing the show with Don Newsom there at BBS Radio for about a year and a half now, and we've never had this happen before.
I think it's my cell phone. The screen goes black whenever it shuts off.
But the thing is, I got cut off on the last one, too. I think there's something that's going on there. So kind of ironic we're talking about interference and whatnot. I was just wondering, in talking about pulling together this group of scientists who are collaboratively working on affecting the weather for good and controlling the weather in ways that are beneficial to mankind, what do you do when a rogue machine comes on the scene? How do you detect it? How do you identify it? Is there a way to do that?
Detecting it, right now we haven't got a way of detecting one of these things. That's one of the odd things about it. The wave is so long, nobody's got a method of measuring 20-mile waves. You know, short waves can be measured, but long ones, nobody's figured out how to measure them yet. You know, the way to find them would be to actually, at this point in time, be difficult. You'd have to find someone that could sense the beam from a flame to a machine and try and home in on and find it.
My dad actually might be one that could help with that, because he works with the National Bureau of Standards, or did.
I think we'll be able to measure this. Now that we know what it is, somebody's going to come up with a meter that'll just pick it up like a Fox hunt, CB radio hunt, you know. That's what we want.
The atomic clock and GPS propagation and measurement of time and propagation of time with the NIST in Boulder, and he's always come up with some really clever ways to do things just like this, so I bet he could figure it out.
Well, take and light the flame, get between it and Arizona, stick your hand in that beam, feel it, and I'll get a machine that'll measure that, and then you're onto it, because that'll find the machine. Whatever that is, that's what we're looking for. But we've tried all kinds of stuff, we can't measure it. People have gone to Arizona and tried to measure the sensation coming out of the ground there, and they can't measure it. Scientists have tried several times to identify whatever this is there. Psychics flock to Arizona. They claim they have superpowers there, and maybe they do. It's who's to say?
Do you have a website that people can go to get more information?
Not really. I just got my telephone number. I can give you that one more time.
Go ahead.
641-330-6392.
I'm also going to be posting a feature page about this at PezWiki.com. We'll call it something like David Wells' weather machine.
That'll be all right. It's time to pass this on. I'm 64 years old. I've had bladder cancer. I might not be around much longer, and I'd hate to see this disappear like the PAP engine or something like that, or Roy Johnson's magnetron engine. These guys died, and they had great ideas. Nobody knows how to do it anymore. You know, we lost good ideas because the guys didn't pass them on. It's time to turn this loose and have something happen. It's a discovery, I think, as significant as finding electricity, actually, and it's hard to imagine that you come up with something like this and nobody seems to care. When you talk about it to people, they fall asleep or they get up and leave. Nobody wants to pay you for doing weather.
The believability is a pretty high, big obstacle for most people.
Yeah. That's another problem with it. It's a slow-moving show. Anybody who looks at it for any length of time at all, you know, they cannot deny this work. But I've had people, you know, I say, watch this, I'll demonstrate on this storm here and affect the storm. But by the time the storm is being affected, they're long gone. They left.
We are to the end of our segment here. I really appreciate you coming on here.
We can talk anytime. You know, I'm available. I'm retired. I got nothing else to do with this.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm waiting for somebody to step in and help here, you know, and that might happen, you know, if enough people find out about it.
That sounds good. Maybe this show can help get to some people that you're looking for.
I hope so. Try anything, I guess. Anyway, meanwhile, it's business as usual. Let me know if you want some rain.
Sounds good. Take care, David. Thanks for coming
on. Okay, Sterling. Thanks for calling.
Been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, your energy systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information.
dreams.